Welcome to Artificially Intelligent Marketing, a weekly podcast where we stay on top of the latest trends, tips, and tools in the world of marketing AI, helping you get the best results from your marketing efforts. Now let's join our hosts, Paul Avery and Martin Broadhurst.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back again to Artificially Intelligent Marketing. Paul Avery here, and I'm also joined by my good pal, Martin Broadhurst. Martin, how are we?
Oh, I am alive and kicking this morning. It's been half term last week, so I was not in the office, but I was exploring the Science Museum in London and the Natural History Museum and doing all that good touristy stuff with the four-year-old in tow.
Any robots?
There were robots at the Science Museum for sure. There was a large animatronic T-Rex at the Natural History Museum, although I'm not entirely sure that constitutes artificial intelligence.
Goodness, I hope they don't put GPT-5 in that. And then it's like, but it might be able to see, but I learned from Jurassic Park very reliably that it can only see you if you move. So I'd love to see that. You just still stood in the museum now, Martin, like, we can't move.
Just very still. I mean, that is an absolute nonsense myth perpetuated by Jurassic Park. Huge eyeballs vision that was kind of, the eyes were at the front, right? So it's got proper depth perception. It had very good vision.
Are you suggesting that Hollywood movies can't be trusted for their factual accuracy? Because that would basically ruin my life if you suggest that's true.
Look, I'm just saying that Jurassic Park, as great a movie as it is, and boy, do I love it, wasn't representative of the actual abilities of dinosaurs as we understand them.
Right, sorry, listeners, we should cut this out. We're going to make you listen to this unnecessary stories about dinosaurs. But there's some stories that are very necessary about AI this week, and we're going to get stuck into everything that marketers need to know. Martin, kick us off with, you've been trawling through earnings calls, haven't you, and found some interesting stuff. What have you been looking at?
The past week, we've had earnings calls from both Google and Meta, both of which highlight the importance of the AI investments within the actual advertising suites of both companies. Just starting with Meta, they have announced huge engagement improvements through using new AI tools and AI product offerings. So they're saying that the AI recommendations led to 5% more time on Facebook and 10% on Threads. Video time on Instagram is up more than 30% last year, and that's been driven by AI. And Facebook systems now surface twice as many reels published per day. They've also launched this new tool called Vibes, where you can, within the Meta AI app, you can basically create images and have them animated as well. And I think that's in partnership with Midjourney, where they're using some of the Midjourney technology for a kind of aesthetics application within the image generation. In terms of numbers of images created, it's quite massive. People have created over 20 billion images using Meta's products. So that's quite dramatic. But the big story, really, as I mentioned, is the AI in advertising. So they're saying that the financial impact of AI is huge. There is an annual run rate of end-to-end AI-powered ad tools, which has passed $60 billion. So that's to say there is $60 billion worth of advertising on an annualized basis that is being affected, impacted, deployed, call it what you may, using the AI suite of tools within Facebook.
It's super interesting because obviously, I think as marketers, we spend a lot of our time thinking about generative AI and the stuff we can make. But a big thing that many marketers are interested in, but is taking a while to really solidify, is targeting, right? We want to send the right message to the right person at the right time, and AI has a lot of applications to offer us there. So it sounds like Meta is really ramping up its ability to know what content it needs to show to what person to keep them on site, which as an advertiser, you're probably quite happy with, because it probably means they're also surfacing the right ads to the right people more accurately and effectively than they did so in the past.
Yeah, very much so. And it goes beyond the creative into all of those areas that you've touched. So they've got this suite of tools called Advantage Plus, which has audience targeting, it has creatives, it has placements, which decides where the ads should appear. So should they appear in feed, in reels, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Threads, etc. But they've also got destination targeting as well, and budget optimization. Now, you can deploy an ad campaign using the whole suite, or you can just choose Advantage Plus audiences or creative for creative optimization. Now, all of this kind of feeds into Mark Zuckerberg's vision for the advertising suite. He actually says on the earnings call, advertisers are increasingly just going to be able to give us a business objective and give us a credit card or bank account and have the AI system basically figure out everything that's necessary, including generating video or different types of creative that might resonate with different people that are personalized in different ways, finding who the right customers are.
See, this is going to be interesting. I don't think it's so true now, but in the I'm not going to say early days, but earlier, less sophisticated AI days, there was reticence from folks working in things like, you know, Google search ads to leverage AI, because I think there was this feeling that AI, from Google's perspective, their goal was to get you to spend more money. And that if you turn over control of your campaigns to Google, you may or you may not get better results. But one thing they felt you could guarantee is you would end up spending more money. It'll be interesting to see if marketers continue to feel like that as these suites of tools emerge, because, you know, do you really want to hand over complete control of your campaigns to your supplier? Basically, he's like, yeah, I'll optimize your campaigns. You will, on average, spend about 5 times more than you used to. Are you cool with that? Because I'll definitely get you better results. And I guess there are some business models where you want to scale up and up and up, but there are others where things like product inventory will become the limiting factor and all of this type of stuff. So yeah, I can see the advantage for everyone. I'm not sure. I don't trust Meta to take most of the spoils of making this better. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. They're going to skim off as much as they can. And I think the experience of any advertisers using things like performance maxing Google will tell you that there's a somewhat obfuscation of data that you can access. And when you dig into the kinds of things it's been bidding on and you see how much it's bid on some of the keywords, there is quite a lot of money being burnt on ad targeting and ad placements that no human would have ever decided to have actually deployed. There is another interesting development on the Meta AI piece, which is where they're getting their targeting options from. So starting from December, they are announcing that the company will use conversation data from the Meta AI chat app to target ads. So that means any chats that are conducted with Meta AI on Messenger, on WhatsApp, or anything like that could soon inform the ads that you see. Now, this will obviously open up more insights into what people are looking for, what kind of more stronger intent data, shall we say, but also privacy concerns. I mean, talk about waving a red flag.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Meta's got like 1 billion monthly users of their AI, so they claim. I'd love to know what counts as a use of Meta AI, because certainly I don't chat with it on any platform, but I don't know if I search for something on Instagram or whatever, maybe that counts as an interaction. But ultimately, everybody's doing this, right? ChatGPT is going to have a... How do they create the memory function if they don't also give themselves the ability to share very personalized ads based on the same memory that you as a user are benefiting from? Obviously, Google's entire business model is understanding the searcher to show them better ads and, you know, more relevant ads over time. It's almost like, I feel like Meta's the one that, you know, there's no smoke and daggers. We all know what their end game is. But anybody who with a product that's driven by AI is trying to basically optimize for our attention regardless and better understand us in order to do that. So, yeah, and the cynic in me is like, oh, it makes me not want to use any Meta products. And then, like, I take a step back from that. I'm like, no, I probably shouldn't use any digital products if I feel like that. And then, you know, that's probably most of the things I use during my day. I've now got to start questioning whether or not I would use them or not. So maybe privacy is a myth. But I can see that people will definitely potentially be a bit freaked out by some of this.
They will. But hats off to Meta for, you know, they're quite upfront about it. And I guess this is another way in which the incentive is there for them to develop a stronger foundational model. Because when people start using Meta AI, when they have an experience using Meta AI, which is free, and it's delivering results that are as good or comparable with the best chatbots elsewhere, then low friction, low cost is a path that we know consumers often take. So if they can monetize that, as you say, there's no hiding what Meta's business model has always been about, is advertising revenue at the end of the day. So yeah, there's strong incentives for them to create a super intelligent model to get you to chat to it a bit more.
Yeah, so obviously Meta pretty busy, but Google had a pretty good quarter as well, and supposedly driven quite a lot by AI. What was going on over at Google and their earnings call?
Pretty good quarter indeed. They posted their first ever $1 billion quarter. And the driver...
$100 billion quarter.
Sorry, yeah. I mean, should we edit that out?
We're not going to edit this out. Sorry, listeners, we're leaving it in. Because I have now just got Dr. Evil in my mind, and mine's going... They made $1 billion, and then everyone with Dr. Evil was like, "No, they're a trillion dollar company. $100 billion, $100 billion quarter, Martin." And what's driving this? Is it AI?
Completely thrown me off there. Yes, it's AI. Unsurprisingly, in its core ad products for both search and YouTube. Both seeing 15% year-on-year growth. New features like AI overviews are encouraging users to make more complex queries and to stay on the platform a bit longer, while automated campaign tools like the aforementioned Performance Max are delivering performance lifts as well. So, yeah, all in all, pretty good. Sounds like the AI tools for YouTube and video advertising is quite interesting. So they're using AI to analyze video content to identify better fit creatives for certain videos based on the content of the video, which I think is quite an interesting use case. But yeah, they're saying AI is the future of advertising. But interestingly, when you dig into the numbers, the ad network, so the external network, can you remember what that's called? I can't. The display network, basically. Revenue from that is down. And some people are saying, well, that's because AI mode and AI search is sending less traffic to publishers. So if publishers are getting less traffic, then Google's display ads are getting shown less. So it's kind of cannibalizing that bit of its market.
I'm sure there are markets where Google Display works really well, but it always used to make me smile. In the life sciences, it's so easy to set it up wrong and burn a load of cash sharing ads in places you don't want them. The classic is the amount of ads that get shown on like kids' games on like your mobile phone. You know, the free games where it's like you play for like 10 minutes and then you have to like watch an ad for look at an ad for 15 seconds. Got my own problems with Google Display anyway. Maybe people are just moving away from using it because it's not always that good. But it is interesting because we were just talking about, you know, who gets the spoils if ads work better. But there were a couple of case studies. Again, they can cherry pick these. I don't know how robust these are, but, you know, Kayak seeing that 10-12% increase in conversion value. SoFi achieving that 39% improvement in conversion volume. That at least is a share of the spoils in terms of AI improving performance, which is pretty interesting. The other thing I saw here was pretty interesting, Martin, because we talked about this a lot off air, is Reels and Shorts. So YouTube Shorts are now earning more revenue per watch hour than traditional in-stream ads, which is, you know, ever more evidence that people are migrating to short, bite-size content. We've seen success, little insider secret for the podcast people, with our own Reels, running them on YouTube Shorts, being able to get much greater penetrance than we could with, you know, the full-length episode. Google obviously working overtime to try and, you know, show these short-form content to people, get them engaged in it, etc. So it's going to be interesting to see that continue. And maybe that is a great place then to be putting your ads as well. And I'm sure PMax is doing that automatically. So it creates quite a complex ecosystem, right? They've got their own chips. They've got their own AI models. They've got the reach that comes with Google Search and YouTube and all of these platforms. It's hard to... I mean, for me, Google would really have to mess this whole AI thing up not to be the winner in the end, surely.
Yeah, and their capital investments are increasing dramatically as well. So in this earnings report, they talked about $95 billion of capital expenditure forward-looking. So I think, in fact, that might have been this year, and they're looking to continue that as well. So huge investments across the board, but they're not alone in that. I think you can see the same thing from, well, obviously from OpenAI, but also from all the other big labs as well.
Rightio. Let's move on to our next story then, Martin. What have you got for us next?
Okay, so some big acquisition news from my favourite CRM provider. I should say, full disclosure, I am a HubSpot Platinum partner, so I'm bound to plug them wherever I can. But yes, HubSpot have announced the acquisition of XFunnel, which is a platform dedicated to what it calls Answer Engine Optimization, AEO. You might see it GEO, Generative Engine Optimization, call it what you will, but it's basically how visible are you in search queries within AI chat assistants. So this acquisition is pretty much a direct acknowledgement that more and more people are turning to AI first rather than search engines, and brands need to make sure that they're part of that conversation. HubSpot says AI-driven leads already convert 3 times better than traditional search, and this is a bet on that accelerating as a trend.
Back to AEO. Yeah, it's one of those. I still think I understand why everybody's betting that people start interacting with chatbots more than Google search, and people remember that. A lot of people, I think, feel they missed the boat on SEO. Like, if I was the first to market for SEO, can you imagine all the traffic I would have got and how much money I would have made? And, oh, does everybody remember when Google Ads was really cheap? Not me, because I didn't use it early enough. And by the time I figured out to use it, it was too expensive for everyone. So I think there's this weird FOMO that's driving all of this, which is not to say interacting with chatbots, having your brand present in chatbots, is strategically valuable. It is probably where everybody's going to go. Don't know what that time period is going to be. But using a chatbot to get information is quite often not the same as Google searching for stuff. I do think there'll be a time where we're like, ChatGPT, I need to buy XYZ. Can you go do the research and give me a breakdown of which one I should buy? But I just don't know how quick that's going to come around. And so this massive push into AEO, I know it's important. I do think people should be thinking about it, especially if you've got quite a sophisticated marketing stack already and you do SEO and you do PPC. Like, you can probably start to get ahead early here if you're doing the right things. But look, obviously HubSpot think it's important, because otherwise they wouldn't have made this acquisition.
Yeah, and I'm very much inclined to agree with you. We've discussed previously, people are saying, how do you optimize for search in AI? And I think this is such a nascent technology and channel for people that the tactics at work today will probably change in 6 months. I think I saw an interesting study that looked at how prominent Reddit was in the search results of OpenAI. And now within 6 months of that first piece of research coming out, Reddit has dramatically fallen off in terms of the visibility within search results. So clearly there's some tweaking and ongoing optimization of search results and sources in the back end. But generally speaking, if you are trying to optimize for AI, I don't think you can do yourself any harm by focusing on just having good brand building campaigns. The classics of good PR will stand you in good stead when it comes to getting found in both search, whether that's traditional search or AI search.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think about interacting with the chatbot on if I'm going to buy something or if I'm gathering information on something as having an intern, and that intern is going to try and gather information from lots of sources and then weigh up what is important and what isn't. And ultimately having, you know, that high brand awareness, that brand equity, that people speak about your brand favorably online in lots of different places. So it's very likely that if you've been good at marketing and you continue to be good at marketing, you're probably going to do quite well when it comes to the alien intern AI going off and doing some research and coming back and saying, I've looked into it. This product here has 5-star reviews, is mentioned in lots of case studies, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I suspect where most people will go hunting is for where the early arbitrages are. Like you said, if Reddit was being disproportionately used to drive results and you go all out on Reddit and try and make sure your brand dominates in Reddit, then probably for a month or two, maybe you are doing much better. And I suspect that is the bit that everybody's hunting to try and capture. But like you said, if it moves that quickly, you may invest a load of time and energy optimizing for something that's a short-term hack that doesn't actually then deliver long-term value. Do you get the value for money of trying to, you know, push too hard? Or should you, white hat style, invest in all the good marketing practices that you either get good results over the long term and will probably get you good results when it comes to being mentioned in AI answers?
Yeah, I think if you've been in the SEO game for the last, well, forever, you've seen this story before.
Yeah, 100%. That being said, it's quite nice when you have one single platform. Obviously, we're HubSpot users as well. Our website is built on HubSpot. And it's nice when you have one tool to rule them all. It certainly does make your lives a bit easier. So I'm all for HubSpot adding more and more capabilities that just make it easier for us to do holistic marketing and track performance and results.
Yeah, I think having this baked in, because the product that they've got in terms of its capabilities, Xfunnel will search across all of the major search platforms. So it will look on Claude, it will look on ChatGPT, it will look on Grok, etc., etc. So it's got some really nice dashboards and reports. I assume they're going to bring in these core elements into the product, but I expect as much as anything, given that the product itself isn't that old. I dare say this is as much a talent acquisition as anything else. But yeah, I think HubSpot, with their shift towards what they're calling loop marketing, which is a kind of progression away from inbound marketing of attract, convert, close, delight, or whatever that ended up becoming, attract, engage, delight, I think it was, with the flywheel. They're now talking about loop marketing and this very much feeds into that. Now, whether you think loop marketing as a methodology is good or not, we can have that conversation over on LinkedIn. But maybe one for another day, Paul.
No, we're having it here. There's two things. You've triggered me now. The first thing is, and I don't want this to be confirmation bias, but I saw a really interesting post on LinkedIn this week of someone highlighting the amount of traffic for a bunch of websites they manage that was coming from ChatGPT and other AI sources had basically bottomed out. So obviously it started at naught, went up to like 2-5% as a source, and then didn't move over the last few months. And that ChatGPT was by far the biggest referrer of traffic compared to Claude, Perplexity and stuff. Take of that what you will. Obviously my confirmation bias was like, yeah, see, it may not be a massive source yet because they provide you with answers in the chat. They don't give you links to go click. Which of course doesn't mean that people then don't go Google stuff and then you can't track that through. And, you know, I take it that that's a bit of a dark art to try and figure out that traffic. The second thing is HubSpot. Oh, you got to love them. They did so well coining a methodology, inbound marketing, basically, you know, create a new way of marketing that's so tightly associated with their commercial brand. Genius, right? Of course it was genius. However, they're now like, do you know how we were really successful? We came up with this cool methodology. We got everyone to do it. And then we basically completely tied it to our brand. Now we need a new methodology so that we can tie it to our brand. Enter loop marketing. Oh, what's old is new, and give it a name and all this other stuff. So I'm a bit cynical on that stuff. I know you are as well, Martin. You might as well tell us your real feelings about loop. Can you do it?
I just do not buy it at all. First of all, I think my biggest issue is it with it. The previous iterations of attract, engage, delight, and attract, convert, close, delight, what have you, were all related and aligned to different areas of the customer journey. You were moving someone through stages of they buy, whether it was the awareness stage, the consideration stage, the decision-making stage, you were aligning that. The loop marketing piece moves away from that. So we don't get into the whole customer. It's not customer focused. It's how you, it's an internal methodology. It's how you execute marketing internally. So you find your brand voice, you create and amplify, and then you iterate and evolve. I haven't even got the whole thing right there. Such is my disinterest in it, but it's about how you internally execute, and it's so far away, so far removed from the customer, which used to be the central point of the whole method, that I find it a bit jarring, if I'm honest. It feels like such a shift in terms of HubSpot's tone.
That's super interesting when you put it that way, because I think one of the things that made HubSpot so successful was identifying how important it was to put the customer at the center of everything that you do, and how to push brands more towards doing that. So then to pivot into a model which doesn't do that, I mean, how long before they put the AI at the center of everything? That'll be the next model. It's probably 4 or 5 years away, and it's when you have to optimize for AI agents instead of humans.
It's coming. It's absolutely, it's just around the corner. I think I can smell it in the air.
Do you know what, man? I was doing some work this week just thinking about scenario planning for, you know, if you're a marketer over the next 5 years, like you run a marketing team, you're a marketing director, let's say, what should you do if AI never gets any better? Right through to what should you do if companies become swarms of AI agents, that where there's like five human employees and 1,000 AI agent employees. And this was mostly driven by the book that we've been having a bit of a reading club, haven't we, Mark? We've been reading The Last Economy by Emad Mostak, which is super interesting, and it kind of drove my thinking here. Just he paints a picture where it's not unreasonable to expect AI agents running most of commercial organizations. So I've been thinking about a lot of this stuff, and there's such a wide variety of possibilities actually on the technology front, because it's moving so quickly, that the biggest bottleneck is probably going to be human change and adoption. We talked about this a little bit on the last podcast when we were talking about training, but I was just wondering, what sort of futures are you preparing for? Like, in your mind, what does marketing as a function look like over the next couple of years?
This is a question that people ask in the workshops that I deliver quite a lot, and I really struggle to have an answer, because it's so difficult to know how the scenarios vary so wildly if AI agents become a thing in the way that they are described: autonomous, goal-oriented, on 24/7, able to take action. If that world transpires in, say, 3 to 5 years, that's a dramatically different world from one in which they don't really happen. And actually, when we refer to AI agents, what we're really talking about is AI agentic workflows that are 80% built by humans with a few steps where agents get involved along the way. And so they're wildly different. And I think it also depends entirely on how that agentic capability manifests at the consumer level as well. We've seen Google at the developer conference recently sharing AI mode with the ability to make purchases. So you can do your search, you can research a handbag, it will bring up a list of handbags, and then you can say buy that. And they're creating these AI commerce platforms that you can integrate with. And PayPal is integrating with ChatGPT as well. So in terms of what we can say is happening, I think marketers are going to need to make sure that whatever their routes to market are, they have got those optimized for AI commerce in the next 12 months. That needs to happen. You need to enable your route to market to be able to sell through an AI agent at a basic level, as just described. Beyond that, where people are autonomously sending out agents to run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that feels so far away. Like when you try and use an agent over a prolonged time horizon, you just get so many errors and frustrations that it just feels like another world. If that actually can happen, then I'm not the person to answer that question, because at that point we are reshaping the future.
I think that's a really good answer. Seeing as I put you on the spot, Martin, that's a cracking answer. Shall I take you through the scenarios that I mapped out?
Would you be interested? I would love to hear them.
All righty. So I think the first thing with this is I was doing a brainstorm here with AI, which I guess feels a bit meta and potentially somewhat biased, but it was usually ideas I had that I wanted AI to critique, and it did a really good job. And if you don't do that, dear listener, very often, it is amazing if you analyze a particular situation or you come up with some ideas, try and encourage the sycophantic AI not to be a sycophant and to actually critically assess your ideas and find the holes, because then you can plug them or change your idea or what have you. So when I was going through this process, I was mindful that the timelines I was working on were 3 to 5 years, but I do think we will reach one of the later scenarios, but it just might take 10 years instead of 3, 5. And so I think as you listen to this, I want you to keep that in mind. And then I want you to be the human critique agent, and you can see if you can pull these apart. So scenario number one is basically business as usual. It's where we're at now. For whatever reason, hallucinations are still rife. Agents can't be trusted to do anything because they just make too many compounding errors. And we're left adopting the tech that we have now. And it does help improve speed and efficiency in areas by allowing us to create first drafts of content, start to do some smart analysis of different channels and how well they're performing so that humans can optimize strategies and place different bets and et cetera. But you're getting not much more than the efficiency gains that you're getting now. And you're doing this also in a sea of fears around AIs going rogue and making mistakes. I mean, we've already seen those examples, right? With chatbots providing information that they shouldn't and companies being held accountable for what AI chatbots say, right? Just those types of compliance fears, which probably means how you're marketing now is how you market for quite a while. I don't think that's going to be the scenario, but that's kind of scenario one. Scenario two is AI is more broadly used and it starts to augment campaigns, and it's more trustworthy for delivering on certain aspects of work. So there might be small niche agents that can do stuff that you can rely on without having to micromanage them. And this is interesting because even though the humans are still the strategists, maybe this conductor role that we've talked about in the past, the ability to do much more at scale becomes significantly increased when the first draft of content needs barely any edits, or you can set an AI agent to go in, you know, maybe Pmax is able to do a little bit what you said about Meta earlier, like give us a goal, give us a credit card, and we'll optimize for that. then I think you start to see a real speed increase. I want to believe that marketing teams stay the same size and do five times as much work and drive that type of commercial growth. But of course, that might not be the case. I do think that will be, though. I think under these conditions, as an individual, this is where you're like, I need to make sure that I am learning how to leverage these systems to scale myself. But there's still error. There's no set and forget. It's human in the loop in a lot of different areas. And it's just those niche things. And I can imagine this is where having a HubSpot that has 15 different AI products that allow you to build great email campaigns or to make your social media publishing, but with a human review step before anything goes live and stuff like that, what I think will be quite critical. Because I think you'll be living in the marketing tools you've already got and getting better and faster because of bits that they do for you that you would have done yourself. You could argue that we're here already, but I don't think we are. Like, you can't tell HubSpot, I want to run an email marketing campaign, and it builds five emails and you just like run your eyes over them. We're not there yet. In scenario three, it's kind of the same thing, but the scale up is being driven by personalization. So you told us a bit earlier about what Meta's being able to do with capturing more and more data about folks. And it's the ability for AI to segment audiences in fine detail based on behavioral signals. But we then have to use AI to create content at the scale to meet those people where they're at, because it's almost like AI gives us ability to market to smaller groups, but we don't want 100 people trying to do that. That wouldn't be very efficient or effective. So AI does a lot of the work. And again, to be able to market, to go from five segments to 500, you're going to be trusting the AI to run SAM campaigns without human oversight, right? We're starting to get to the point where I feel like that's plausible in the next couple of years. I think the biggest thing to watch out for is how well AI-driven advertising really can leverage those signals. So this Meta, how this develops with Meta is going to be really interesting. And also the pushback from humans, right? Personally, I would rather have ads that are much more personalized to me than, I know I'm going to see ads because that's how these platforms make their money. So I'd rather they were personalized. But not everybody feels like that. And you will have those scenarios. I don't know if this is an apocryphal tale at this point, Martin. Do you know that story about the supermarket club card style point system where somebody... Yeah, I see you nodding. Tell me, do you know this story?
Yeah, so it was from America, wasn't it? It was like Target or one of those was supposed to have sent somebody the pregnancy-related catalogue, was it, through the post? And it was supposed to be that their buying purchases indicated that they were pregnant before they even knew they were pregnant.
Right. And I think also they lived in a household with their wider family, and therefore the other members of their family knew they were pregnant as well, because this thing lands on the table and triggers that conversation that they didn't really want. So there's obviously going to be a number of times where this doesn't work well, and they're going to be really big news. And I do think that that will somewhat hold some of this stuff back. Scenario four, this is where we start to like overreach a little bit. And it becomes hard to imagine. But like I said at the beginning, I don't think that means it doesn't happen. I just think it maybe takes longer, which is AI can automate marketing workflows at scale on a near one-to-one level. And we go from like an AI conductor that's managing like a copywriting agent and a ad management agent to like an AI business director that has a marketing agent that manages all those other agents. And marketing is borderline a function that's being driven by AI. AI is capturing data on customers, creating hypotheses about products that should be developed and influence the whole business stack, which becomes much harder to imagine, I think. And then the last scenario is the one that's the hardest to imagine, as you alluded to a moment ago, Martin, which is kind of along the EMADMA stack lines for the next economy, where agents are the entire business. And there may not even be a director of the agents. The director is an agent themselves. And as humans, we might just be lucky to be the shareholders or whatever that are maybe giving the business overall goals about the markets we want to be in and what have you, but the agents are doing all the work. If I went down a rabbit hole with this one, mine, and you can start to imagine these weird agentic AI swarms that recruit other agents. It's almost like a gig economy for agents, where the business itself is not like, oh, well, there were 100 agents and now there are 1,000 agents. It's like, no, there's probably just like one agent, and it recruits all these other agents when it needs them for certain aspects, whether that might be, you know, product strategy, manufacturing, because maybe this is being driven by robotics. And then you have an entire economy almost entirely driven by AI and robots, at which point, as a marketer, you're probably not required, let's be honest. You probably weren't required in scenario 4, but by scenario 5, you're hopefully not only it's not a 4-day week or a 3-day week, it might be a 0.5 day week. And hopefully we have got this wonderful abundant future where we can play golf or knit or go to the beach or play Call of Duty or whatever it is you want to do with your life. And you don't actually necessarily have to worry so much about working for money to live. But I've dumped a lot of information on you there, Martin. Thoughts?
Well, scenario 5 is borderline singularity territory, isn't it? If marketing as a function is affected to that degree, so is pretty much every other business function at that point. And I think that is where some of the AI labs envisage this going. And instead of you having a payroll to your employees, you just have all of your AI agents powered by board or whatever it may be. I really like the idea of them just kind of dipping in and out of other agents, so coordinating agents, not just your own internal agents, but pulling on external ones. And it's interesting if you think about what that would mean as a pivot for, say, software providers. Let's say you're, I don't know, MailChimp, and you have an email marketing agent that companies internal marketing director agent can just kind of tap into and go, right, we've got this database, go create a campaign for us, here's our creative from our Canva or Adobe agent, execute that at scale across this segment. I hadn't considered operating like that, but I guess in some respects it's like MCP and API credits. You'd be dipping in and out of the services as and when you need them. I think the scenario that you describe, so scenario 4, just remind me what that one.
Scenario 4 is the one where we are effectively mostly driven by agents. There's like a business director who's a human who's like, okay, we want to enter this market. But the marketing director is an agent that directs a bunch of other agents. I think in some ways you can think of these scenarios as less human coordination of niche agents and the agents becoming the coordinators until they are the entire economy, basically. So in scenario 4, there is still a CEO, there may even be some sort of human leadership team, but a lot of the planning, strategy and execution is being done by the agents based on the goals set by the humans.
I think that's certainly feasible looking a few years out, particularly when businesses start to reimagine their entire workflows and start thinking AI agent workflow first. If you look at the positioning with, say, Zapier at the moment, they're really talking about AI orchestration is the big thing they're talking about. How do you get AIs to orchestrate other AIs using either predetermined workflows that maybe have an AI step in them or agentic workflows where a big chunk of the work is done by AI, but then the following steps or the trigger might be initiated by a human. It requires rethinking the structure of the organization, doesn't it? It's a complete reevaluation of the workload and the tasks done from start to finish. Easier done from a startup. If you're a marketing agency today and you're thinking, right, we want to scale up and we're currently one person, five people, 10 people, whatever it may be. If you're a small agency, you can think about redesigning your workflows from the ground up. Much more difficult if you're a 500 person manufacturing business with long established workflows, and then you've got the threat then of other people in your industry going, well, actually, we know how they manufacture their product. If we can do all of the, let's say, the back office stuff, we can do the procurement, the finance, the marketing, the sales, we'll do that with agents, but we'll do the manufacturing as is. You've got a competitor who can do what you can do with 500 people, but they can do it with, say, 100. And that changes the game.
I'm so glad you said that, because there's two things that spring to mind. The first one is, once you get up to scenario 3 and 4, probably 4, you are looking at AI-first companies that eat the lunch of existing companies. Because retooling, I've gone through those things, like that phase transition's easy. Oh, so it starts out and the agents do a bit of the work, and then it's like by the end they do all of the work. And that's maybe fine if there's like 10 people in a company and they have to like adapt and they get a decent timeline to do it. What if you're a 1,000 person company? Like that, you know, humans are likely to resist this for obvious reasons. Plus the systems and processes of these businesses will have, and their data and their tech stacks that are not augmented for this. It's so much easier to make that leap if you just build it from scratch that way. And in theory, those organizations would be so much more efficient and effective. They would eat the lunch of the big old businesses easily, right? They'd be like, oh yeah, so we are able to achieve, 10x revenue per employee as you can, as an example. So like, how quick does it take to outcompete those businesses under those conditions? Very, very easy to do. One would assume. The other thing that this forgets is the customers. Because if you're assuming that your customers are humans, then you need, the way we frame this is the efficiency gains, etc. And I do think, you know, hyper-personalization of products and ads is obviously hopefully going to be better for the customers. But there are a number of different things that can massively shatter these scenarios where humans value human products and outputs so much, they're willing to pay much more for things that humans crafted and created. It's like, actually, I don't want to buy something that was all robotics and AI. I want to work with a human. Like, I want to speak to a human on the phone. And those things could emerge and completely disrupt all of this. And so if the customers don't get a better experience, this won't be as adopted as it sounds like it obviously should be, because ultimately, if it's still humans spending the money, then it's going to be all about customer experience. So I think that's probably quite an interesting factor. The other thing I dug a bit deeper into is, how do we know where we are and what sort of things should we look for if we want to say, oh, scenario 2's in the offing, should probably start planning ahead with that in mind. So I had quite a good conversation with ChatGPT about that as well. And we started sort of digging into, you know, where are we? I'm not going to describe now. I think we all know where we are right now. But if we will know if things are stalling, if there's more indications that this is a AI bubble and that, earnings of AI companies don't accelerate and some money stops going into the sector. Maybe regulation like the EU AI Act just makes it too hard to start personalizing at scale and stuff like that would be quite useful. But we will be moving into scenario 2 if we start to see niche agents that can actually deliver on a particular task without any handholding. Like, if HubSpot introduces a social media posting agent where all you do is review the copy before it goes out, we're starting to drift into, you know, scenario 1. If we start to see Meta's pilots start to be successful, if we see those case studies that show we're able to gather, leverage, and advertise based on the data in these platforms, and the humans don't cry, no, you've destroyed my privacy, we're starting to drift into, you know, scenario 3 at that point. And from there, it's just about how much better the agents get and what roles the humans continue to play.
It's interesting you use the example of the HubSpot social agent. That is actually an agent that they've got in the offering at the moment, a social posting agent, which will create the content for you based on some keywords. That's quite limited, but we're kind of at day one of this technology. I think literally this agent was launched in beta like 3 months ago, maybe not even that long. So really early days. And at the moment, having tried some of these tools, they're not great. They have limited use cases, but you can absolutely see as they become more deeply integrated into a platform like HubSpot is your all-in-one powerhouse. So it has your social posting, it has all of your customer data. Where you have fully integrated systems, agents in that environment should thrive. And that should give companies like HubSpot or Salesforce and other platforms a huge advantage, because when they can both go off and do a small task like, oh, research this topic and create some social posts, but then also manage the approval workflow, the actual scheduling, optimization, and reporting of all of that workflow, then things start to get, very stage two, as you would say.
Yeah, I think that's the key. And if you're listening to this, you've either been thinking about this a lot or read some of this stuff already, and you're like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting, but it's, you know, we'll see how it plays out. Others will be like, we've just scared the bejeebus out of them. You know, let's not forget the data centers that are being built right now are to serve AI inference that's agent swarm level, basically, right? That's where all these big build outs are. We're all going to want way more AI access than we currently use. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, I use ChatGPT quite a lot every day already. Why do we need these data centers? And it's because of this, right? So that kind of shows you what they're betting on. There's a guy you and I follow on the LinkedIns and on the WhatsApps called RUV Martin Ruv, who deploys agent swarms for coding requirements and has shipped ridiculous amounts of working code over the last 12 months by building development agent swarms that collaborate together. So these swarm things, this is not like a science fiction idea that Martin and I just found on a Reddit forum somewhere. Like, people are building these, not for marketing, but for other use cases. And so, you know, it's not unrealistic to think that they will emerge. So if we've bamboozled you, and hopefully we haven't, but there are some things that you can do and should do, regardless of which scenario comes to pass. Some of the easy things that you can do is, absolutely, if you're an individual, investing in your own AI training and becoming, you know, an expert in these things is critical. And if you run a team, invest in their training, because the old adage, it is old now, I think, but, you know, it's not, marketers aren't replaced by AI, but they are replaced by marketers that use AI. And so that's critical. I think getting your customer data in order. So there is definitely a world where privacy clampdown makes this hard, and that you can only rely on the first party data that you have about customers. So how can you secure opt-ins, gather data in a legal and fair way, and structure and store it in a way that it's easy for AI models to draw upon as inspiration and insight to help drive some of these smart personalizations and automations that we predict will happen in the future? In line with that, you probably do need some sort of AI ethics and usage charter, both to give your customers trust in how you use AI and data, but also to give guidance to your employees about how they can use AI and data. And then starting to build out some of those human in the loop QA processes. Most people are starting to do this, I think, now. This, we talked previously, Martin, about work slop and how AI is brilliant at writing stuff that makes no sense, and how important it is to have humans in the loop. But looking at how you can start to smart automate aspects of processes with human touch points, you do this really beautifully, Martin, and a number of the automation tools that you've been using. But having those processes in hand will allow you to maintain the quality that you need, but also figure out where you can deploy an AI agent as a particular niche agent emerges. It's like, oh, that bit doesn't have to be a human anymore. It can be an agent instead. And then just be testing tools or listening to podcasts like this, where we test the tools to figure out what those capabilities look like as they actually emerge. Things like, look out for things like the AI coordinator. If an agent appears that can coordinate other agents, that is going to be a major trigger point that everybody needs to keep an eye on. And the early version of that will probably be not dissimilar to one of the use cases Martin told us all about, where he was using Manus to construct online proposals, where Manus came up with the idea based on some information Martin gave it and built this dynamic online experience. It will probably be these computer use agents that do some of the first coordination of tasks. As that gets better, expect to see true agents that can deploy these things. So they're the things to watch out for. Martin, any thoughts on that?
Big takeaway for me is this is going to look very different depending on the size of your organization and the markets that you serve. We talked about AI managed campaigns that does hyper personalization at scale. Great if you're a huge B2C consumer brand with deep pockets, then there's a huge amount that you can go at. And you know, Facebook's massive data set allows it to test and orchestrate AI campaigns at scale, and you can kind of really benefit from that now and in the future if you've got your own first party data. It will serve you well. That's going to look very different if you're a niche B2B manufacturing and engineering company that realistically is speaking to an audience of, say, 50 other companies in the world. So how you think about this is going to change. I think if you are on that more niche B2B side, the episode that we had previously with Harrison talking about the role of AI in sales is probably a really good starting point for you to go back and listen to if you haven't heard that already. But yeah, I think it's going to look very different for different size organizations as this whole thing develops.
I think that's such an important point. And if you're listening to this, why not, you know, spin up Claude, ChatGPT, give it the context about your business and ask it to go through the process that I went through, right? And try and model out scenarios that are going to be much more specific to your context. That's probably the easiest way to get started. You could even pull the transcript of this episode, pull the bits that will be relevant, and give that as part of the context as well. Give it, you know, give it some information about your business, give it some information about the scenarios that we've been discussing, and have some fun pulling it apart, making it more appropriate for you. You should never, you know, you shouldn't take anything we've said here as read. This is just us guessing of how these things could different play out in the future. And certainly ChatGPT can't predict the future either, but it might give you ideas where your intuitive sense of your customers, your market, your business was, oh, I've already seen a few things going this way. How can I capitalize on that? It can help you build the types of if this, then that scenario plans that most small businesses just don't have the time to build, right? You know, Martin and I have both run small businesses. We know that you're busy flying the plane and building the plane, and going through these types of processes with an AI chatbot is, you can do it in an hour instead of having to, you know, take yourself out of your business for a week to really think deeply on it. As long as you keep that critical analysis part of your brain very much engaged and you're questioning everything that you think and that the AI suggests, and really like having both of you criticize and analyze things to try and get as close to robust ideas and experiments you can run and stuff like that. So, all right, bud, good to see you as always. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Artificially Intelligent Marketing. To stay on top of the latest trends, tips, and tools in the world of marketing AI, be sure to subscribe. We look forward to seeing you again next week.